This is a Defocus Media production.
You know, between 80 and 90% of migraine attacks are associated with light sensitivity. 40% of those who suffer migraine attacks actually have residual light sensitivity between attacks, even when they don't have any headache or any other pain. Between 30 and 60% of all migraine attacks are precipitated by light. And we also know if you're suffering from an attack, light is going to make it worse. So you have this really clear association between light and migraine. So if you can interrupt that cycle and you don't have to have somebody looking for a dark room to run to, you can have something that makes a big difference. And that's what Avalex does.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Syan. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here to learn and to grow. As usual, before we jump into the podcast, please remember to share, hit subscribe, hit like, leave a comment, do all the good stuff that helps the podcast grow. And, you know, I'm sure that you're going to get lots of value from today's episode, whether you're in the optical industry or outside of it. There's going to be a lot of value in this interview. I have a wonderful guest, Dr. Charles Pasternak, who is co-founder of an incredible company named Avalex. He's originally from Montreal. He completed his medical degree at the prestigious McGill University. He moved to the United States in 92 and became the department chair of the Cleveland Clinic in Florida, and since then has been the chief medical officer on many organizations, both for-profit and non-profit. And I'm going to let him tell a little bit more about himself in a few minutes, but thank you so much, Dr. Pasternak, for joining me here on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really excited, and thank you for the opportunity of having me.
Absolutely. It's really great to have you here. I think this is a very intriguing topic, like I was saying, that's going to be interesting for people both within the optical industry and, of course, in the masses, because we will be talking a lot about migraines, and we know that there's a lot of people who suffer from migraines are looking for solutions. And here we have one that's a non-medical, non-prescription in the terms of oral medications options that many people could use and benefit from. But before we jump into that, I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself, your journey as a medical doctor, and how you found yourself in the realm of migraines and light research.
Sure. Absolutely not where I would have thought I would be, coming from McGill University. I had the great fortune and opportunity to train, as you said, at one of the best medical schools in the world. And one of the things that McGill prides itself on is really instilling in its graduates academic curiosity and trying to find that next, forefront for science. Going to the U.S. from Canada, you're not really prepared for American medicine. But it was just a great opportunity. I just loved it. And as I got more ingratiated into the American system, I had the opportunity to really evolve as a senior healthcare executive. And why that was so important to me, because it really afforded me the opportunity to understand how medicine is practiced, the economics of medicine. And then during my career, I worked, as you said, in both for-profit and not-for-profit academic medical centers. I was at one point one of the associate deans for academic affairs at the Schmidt College of Medicine at Florida Atlantic University. I worked in the for-profit world. I'm currently a system president for a large healthcare company. But coming down here and seeing the evolution of how healthcare in the U.S. has evolved to what we call value-based medicine, trying to find treatments that have high efficacy, that have very minimal side effects, and have good patient acceptance. That was something that really stayed with me from my time at McGill to the time I'm here in the U.S.
That's excellent. And I would like to point out one thing I left out of your bio there is that you were the team medical doctor for the Florida Panthers. Is that correct? As a big hockey fan?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, it is. As you know, coming from Canada, I was an avid hockey player. Yeah. And I had the opportunity when they became the Florida Panthers in 1993, the then owner of the team was a gentleman, a wonderful man named Wayne Huizenga. And I had the opportunity given to me by him, by the general manager of the team, who that time was Bobby Clark of the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm. And I did it for almost 10 years, and it was just, it was just so much fun. Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, that's almost like a dream for me, is to be a medical practitioner, but somehow, you know, with a professional sports team, particularly hockey. Being from Canada, of course, hockey's the big one for us. So what is it that drew you to the research related to migraines? You know, again, coming from the background that you have, ultimately, what brought you into where you are now?
Sure. I mean, you know, the obvious answer to a layperson would be, well, you know, migraines are the third migraines are the most, the third most prevalent disease in the world and the sixth most disabling, but none of that had anything to do with it. The reality is I have two daughters. Both of them are migraine sufferers. And in particular, my older daughter went through just some horrible times suffering from migraines. And as a parent, watching your child go through all of that pain and discomfort, you will do anything and everything that you can to make it easier for her.
Yeah, absolutely. I can agree with that. And pretty amazing that you went to the lengths that you have. And we're going to talk some more about that now. But you've already touched on migraines being as prevalent as they are. I'd love to talk a little bit about the science. And I know that a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are like myself. They're kind of nerdy, scientific-brained people, and you know, would love to hear a little bit about the science behind this. So, you know, I made a few little notes here myself about the few different studies that are listed. And you know, in 2010, there was this finding of the melanopsin cell. So, I'd love for you to kind of, if you wouldn't mind starting with that, this retinal ganglion cell, especially for the nerdy optometrists out there, they'll know what that is. And
sure,
its role in migraines, and then what that sort of led to from there.
Sure. Yeah, that was pretty much the hallmark study that really kind of dictated the way research, and definitely the way that we evolved as a healthcare company. So, you know, everyone knows that rods and cones in the back of the retina are the cells that are involved in creating visual images from light. But there is a lesser known group of cells called intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells that have other functions. One of them in particular is involved in the mediation of high intensity light and the perception of color. And these are cells that contain a photopigment that goes by the name of melanopsin. And in this really landmark study in 2010, they were trying to understand how light impacts migraines, how light worsens migraine pain. And I use the word migraines, and I want to correct myself because I think this is very important. You know, it is a migraine and is a migraine attack. And this is something I think migraine sufferers are very sensitive about. But what the study found was when light coming from, you know, particularly short wavelength, like the blue wavelength, about 480 nanometers, you know, as well as light from the amber wavelength that's running in the higher 590 nanometers, stimulated these cells. The cells were hyperactivated, and this melanopsin, this photopigment, was then released. And the release of the photopigment seemed to take several different pathways and mediate pain within the neurological system. And that would be both in various nuclei in the midbrain, as well as pain centers in the thalamus, and as well as other optical nuclei. So that was the first study that really said, we have certain wavelengths of light that seem to cause pain. And the way they seem to do this is by activating these very specialized intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells that have melanopsin within them. And melanopsin became then the vehicle to cause the pain that we see when migraine sufferers are exposed to light.
Oh, fantastic. And so then the focus from there, at least partly, became to reduce the release of this melanopsin to then reduce the propagation, or even the potentially the initiation, I guess, of the migraine itself. I like that there was a study in 2016. I can't remember if this was something, sorry, that you were involved with, Dr. Pasternak, but the one that was trying to block one wavelength and using another filter sort of as a, what's the right word? I'm looking at placebo. But it actually turned out that both of those filters ended up being beneficial. I kind of like that. I feel like science is like that, right? You get that serendipity of a finding like that. And then that sort of led to a little bit more of where we are with Avalux. And I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about Avalux, maybe a little bit about what it is now, just so people get an understanding of where we are now. But then I'd like to go back to where it started and the different iterations it went through as well.
Sure, absolutely. And I'll talk a little bit about the science at the same time. So Avalux today is best described as a precision optical filter. So it is a lens that has within it incorporated into the matrix of it, you know, using very sophisticated nanomolecular technology, dyes that selectively absorb light at specific wavelengths that we know worsen pain exacerbated by light in patients with migraine. And the reason we use migraine, and I think this is important to understand too, there are many causes of light sensitivity, not just migraine. But the reason migraine is the disease that is most studied is because the vast majority of those with light sensitivity are patients who do suffer from migraine attacks. So that is why migraine became the focus of all causes of light sensitivity. So this lens that we've created selectively blocks wavelengths of light that we know are associated with worsening migraine pain, as well as allowing through those wavelengths of light that we know to soothe it. It is the only lens of its kind that exists. Its technology is extremely sophisticated. The manufacturer is a very sophisticated manufacturer, and it is patented. So it is a lens that has evolved over the last 8 years from its early iterations to what we have today. And the lens we have today, as you'll soon hear through the podcast, really follows the science extraordinarily well.
Yeah. And actually, one of the studies, again, that I had written here that I forgot to mention, I really liked, was the one that was in the dark room and they exposed patients to different wavelengths of light. I'd love if you could just share a little bit about that study.
Sure. That was actually a very elegant study. It was not done by us, but it validated everything that we ourselves discovered as well, doing our own studies. And this was a study performed at Harvard University, and it was just very elegant in the way it was constructed and the simplicity of the findings. So what they did was they took individuals who do suffer from migraine attacks, and they put them into a dark room. And then at that point, they selectively expose them to different wavelengths of light to see if those wavelengths worsened their migraine attacks and their pain, or if it made it better. And what they found was that light in the blue, amber, white, and red areas of the spectrum tend to worsen migraine-related pain caused by light, whereas green light had a very soothing effect. And again, it was very elegant in its construct. And what it told us is that it's not enough to just block light at the blue range, which is what a lot of the early studies have suggested. But rather, if you block that and you block any other comparable wavelength that exacerbates the pain while allowing the good light through, you now are following the science. And when you follow the science, you'll see the expected outcome. And that really validated what we had already found in our own study that we had done earlier on. And the study you're referring to in 2016 was actually conducted by one of the original inventors of the technology that preceded me. And that was a study that was published in the Journal of Clinical Neurosciences in 2017. It was performed by a well-known neuro-ophthalmologist who I'm proud to say is a partner of mine, Dr. Brad Katz. And there, what they did was they measured the impact of light blocked at 480 nanometers versus light blocked at 620. And they did that because they were trying to color match. But like you said, the spurious finding sometimes ends up with very good results. And they did find that by blocking light at 480, that they were able to see a diminishment in one of the standard migraine scales known as the HIT test, the headache impact test. And it really validated again, right around the same time as the Harvard study was taking place, was, we have a pathway here. Let us see if we can somehow work on treating this pathway if we will have a positive effect on migraine as sufferers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So the I'd love to, you know, the podcast is intended to help to not only share information like this, but also to share the stories of companies and entrepreneurs and so on, and the various challenges and struggles they've been through. And one thing I just find myself constantly drawn to is the story behind this product. Now, as you said, we'll go a little bit more into the detail of what this Avalux lens is, but I found myself drawn to the backstory of like what the initial product was and how that had to be reiterated and developed again. So where did this start and what did the initial product look like?
Sure. It actually started even prior to my involvement. And this was begun by a group of researchers in the Department of Neuro-Ophthalmology at the University of Utah. And they had, you know, the information that they knew about, which is that we have wavelengths of light at 480, which seem to, you know, activate melanopsin secreting cells to secrete the melanopsin. So they had a premise, they had a hypothesis, and what they had to do was find a way, how are we going to block this light at 480 nanometers to see if we are going to have a positive impact on migraine sufferers. So the very early technology was really quite amazing. So they actually teamed up with a manufacturer out of Orlando, Florida, known as Techport. And this was a company that was very sophisticated at working with thin film technology. So they came up with a product. They had a prototypical coating machine that they were going to use to produce this very thin film that was applied to the surface of the lens. And it actually did block a large amount of light at 480 nanometers. Unfortunately, what it also did was block light at very other, including your green light, including your amber light, including your red light. But most importantly, it was a very difficult technology to use. The problems we had with it was an expensive technique and would have been extremely expensive and difficult to scale up. You know, putting films on the outside of lenses are very messy. You then had the issue that it came out very dark. So this was a lens that really would not be ubiquitously adopted for people who are going to be both indoors and outdoors. And the other problem, because the lens was so dark, was that you would end up with difficulty in terms of perceiving color. You definitely would have alterations in your color perception. And the last thing was, and this is probably the most important, the way it worked as a film is it reflected the light it was trying to block. So what would happen, light would come to it from the front, it would hit the film and then be reflected away. But what about light that came from behind the glass, underneath the glass, through the sides of the glass? We wouldn't be able to do that. So in reality, you had to use these wraparound frames in order to make sure that you could mitigate light coming from all other areas. And then you were dealing with, I hate to say this, the ugliest looking glass frame of the world with these very dark lenses that maybe they did work. And we always justified it amongst ourselves saying, well, you know, if you're suffering from such severe migraines, do you really care what they look like? I think it would just give you a migraine just looking at how ugly they were. So clearly that was not going to be our endpoint solution. Right. You know, at that point, we were introduced to an extraordinarily sophisticated optical manufacturer that was ingrained in the military industry. So you could imagine how high their level of quality and how high their level of sophistication was. We went to them and we presented the problem. You know, here we have a lens, it's too dark, too difficult, too expensive. We have to use wraparound frames. We have to control for other light, not to mention the fact, I don't even know if we could scale this up. Can you find a way? And while you're at it, could you make this lens work where you block all of the bad wavelengths, but also let all of the good wavelengths through? And it was amazing. And I remember speaking to one individual there who was their lead researcher. And she looked at me and said, yeah, we can do that. And it was like really amazing. And not only did she say it, but she actually did it. So what they did, and this is the big difference here, instead of having a film on the outside of the lens, what happens is specialized dyes, which are very difficult to obtain, are actually immersed into the matrix uniformly of a lens using this really sophisticated nanomolecular technology. The difference now is you don't have to worry about light being reflected. Light is absorbed. So the light that you don't want to go through is essentially sucked up by this dye. So it doesn't matter where the light comes behind you, above you, beside you, or in front of you, it'll be absorbed and will allow through the really good soothing green light. So they were able to do that, and they were able to make the lens light enough that number one, people would have no trouble wearing it indoors and outdoors. Number two, we can use it with any frame whatsoever. And number three, its efficacy was much better because we were very precise in the filtering of the light we didn't want, which is the blue, the amber, and the red, while at the same time allowing the green through. So we had this, you know, in theory, we had this perfect lens, which was following the science as close as we could follow.
Yeah, I thought that was remarkable when I was learning about the lenses. We often think about, you know, we're going to touch a bit more on this, but we, you know, the blue blocking thing is big these days. And the idea is we're just going to block the bad light. But the idea that you could specifically focus and let the good light through, because there is that good light, as that Harvard study showed, I thought that was really, really incredible. So you're not only eliminating the bad, but specifically allowing in that soothing light as well. And that is a really great concept. So this product now that we have, with the dyes within the matrix, this is now readily available in to the public and to eye care providers. And how are people going to access this?
Well, we've actually been fortunate enough. We've had for the last couple of years, we have had the Plano version of the product. So clearly it is available, you know, through our website as well as any provider, but we had not yet gone to the next iteration, which is the ability to develop a prescription semi-finished lens that would have the same capabilities. You know, you would think it would be, gee, if you can make it in a Plano lens, it must be pretty simple to do it into a semi-finished puck. Let me tell you, that is not the case. Yeah. And in fact, it took several years of intense research. We just now have finalized, and I'm really excited to tell you, is that we do now have a working model of the prescription lens, the semi-finished blanks that we're able to sell. So what we have today are the Plano lenses. We have Plano clip-ons. If somebody, for example, may use contacts and want to use it on top, or they can use our custom frame with our custom clip-on and they put their normal prescription and they use day to day. And when they have, or they feel a migraine attack coming on, they can just put the clip-on on and that'll work. But a large number of patients, you know, who do suffer from migraine attacks have it very often and they need to wear it all the time. So we are now going to have both single vision and progressive lenses available. Wow. And we're going to be rolling that out to Canadian optometrists within the next probably 8 weeks.
Wow, that's very exciting. That's opening up a whole new market for you, which is really incredible. I've seen the frames, very stylish, and the lenses are, I have a pair myself, I apologize not having it on. Actually, I lent them to a friend who gets migraines and she didn't give them back.
That's a good sign, it's very good.
I'm fortunate enough not to suffer from migraines, but she clearly seems to like them. Yes, definitely a good sign. Now, I found them when I was wearing them around, you know, the house and at the office. I felt, well, easily I could wear them inside. And the tint is subtle. You know, it's not dramatic at all and not something that I think even if another person was looking at you, they wouldn't even question, like, those glasses. Why are they wearing tinted glasses? You know, which is, I think, as you discovered early on with one of the earlier versions, the appearance is still very important, unfortunately, even for the severe migraine sufferers. But very excited for that and very excited that it'll be available in Canada soon. Is it already available in the US or is that coming up in the pipeline as well?
Yeah, that will be coming up in the pipeline. Right now, we're doing our initial rollout in Canada for a number of reasons. Number first, it was our first country that, you know, for which we had regulatory approval to roll it out as a class one medical device. Mm-hmm. And also it's my home country. It's a bit of a smaller market. So it allows us to just, you know, test our ability to get it into the market. And again, it doesn't matter really what country you're in within the world. The incidence of migraine sufferers is virtually identical. It's massive. You know, we haven't really talked about this, but, you know, when I told you it was the third most prevalent disease in the world, doesn't kill you. So a lot of times, you know, migraine and it is looked at, oh, that's not really a disease. That's just a headache. No, it's not just a headache. It's one of the most debilitating medical syndromes I have ever seen in my career. And it is not curable. It is genetic and it's staying there. And, you know, it typically tends to affect women three times as much as men. But, you know, typically its highest incidence is during the peak productive years of a woman's or even a man's life, usually, you know, between the ages of, you know, 18 and 50, and the peak incidence between 35 and 40. If you just look at the female population in that age group, more than 20% or one in five females suffer from migraine. And that is just enormous. Yeah. So this has a huge economic burden to society. And we learned a lot of lessons, you know, in the last year when unfortunately we all, you know, been subjected to COVID-19 and something that no one in this world had ever prepared for. We suddenly had a shift of our society, you know, to working from home. And what that really meant was you're working on a digital device. You're working under artificial life. Now, if you are a migraine sufferer and you can't tolerate that digital device, which is very common in migraine sufferers, you're not even able to conduct your normal business activities. You can't go to meetings. You can't participate in virtual meetings. And you still have your normal life that has to go on. So this year was just a monumental year for us because we started seeing even more and more as society kind of, you know, shifts to more home-based businesses and more virtual type interaction that, you know, controlling light and migraines is so critical. It is such a critical requirement. And this just seems to be like just an excellent solution to it.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I think you're absolutely right about migraines often just being shrugged off as just a headache. And I'll even have patients say that, oh, I just get migraines. And I'll always ask a few more questions because you know that it can be very debilitating and it's, you know, it affects people's work life, personal life quite significantly. And you're right with the amount of screen time that we're having. We ask a lot of questions about that and try to mitigate as much as we can through other means. But now we have another option and something I sort of touched on this, I'd love to hear your thoughts a little bit more about it, but the fact that we have an option that is efficacious and has no side effects and can actually, reduce the amount of medications a person needs to take, I feel that that's a pretty significant, factor as well, and ultimately maybe reducing the financial burden for patients or for the medical system.
Yeah, I think that's really important, you know, and I mentioned this, I just touched on it very briefly before, but particularly in the US, and it's really similar in Canada and virtually every other country in the world, you know, our healthcare systems are really overburdened by costs. And there has been an enormous shift, especially again here, just because I work in the US, to what we call value-based healthcare. What that means is, do we have an option that is safe, that is inexpensive, that is widely adaptable, but is also very efficacious. And we're dealing with also a new generation of young people who are your tomorrow's migraine sufferers and your today's, who really are not interested or not wanting to be injected with a medicine or take, you know, a pill in order to make themselves better. They're looking for something that won't cause tolerance, that won't have any adverse effects, that won't have any adverse events associated with it. You know, imagine you're a female, you're 30 years old, you're taking care of kids, you're going through still your during your fertile period of your life. You don't want to worry if you're taking a medicine that could potentially harm a fetus. You know, this is a device, and we'll talk a little bit about the clinical studies later, but it has no side effects. There are no risks to the fetus. It is perfectly safe. It is easy. You just have to put it on your face and it works and it can help in many different ways. And, you know, this is the one thing perhaps that I really want your audience to really understand is this relationship between light and migraine. And again, Avalux is a device that treats photophobia or light sensitivity. But in reality, the vast majority of those who suffer from that syndrome are migraine sufferers. We, you know, as an optometrist, more than anybody else, it can be caused by inflammatory eye diseases like iritis or choroiditis. It could be caused by dry eye. It could be caused by traumatic brain injury, by eye infections, eye trauma. But really, the majority of people are migraines. And what do we know? When you have an individual who has a migraine, what is the first thing they do? I mean, everyone knows this because everybody likely know somebody or is related to somebody who suffers migraine attacks. They look for a dark room. why do they look for a dark room? Because, you know, between 80 and 90% of migraine attacks are associated with light sensitivity. But it's even bigger than that. 40% of those who suffer migraine attacks actually have residual light sensitivity between attacks, even when they don't have any headache or any other pain. We know that between 30 and 60% of all migraine attacks are precipitated by light. And we also know if you're suffering from an attack, light is going to make it worse. So you have this really clear association between light and migraine. So if you can interrupt that cycle and you don't have to have somebody looking for a dark room to run to, you can have something that makes a big difference. And that's what Avalex does. It essentially is the portable dark room. It obliterates, it blocks the cycle of the light that's going to both precipitate the migraine, you know, attack, that is going to help worsen the migraine attack, and even eliminate it between attacks. So it's simple and easy to use. I mean, imagine you're driving down the 401 and it's a bright sunny day and you get this horrible headache. There's no light room around you. You're out with your kids on a soccer field on a bright sunny day. There's nowhere to run and hide. So that's what's so wonderful about these glasses is when you put them on, you immediately go into your dark room. You're immediately interrupting the cycle of those wavelengths of light that are triggering melanopsin to be released, and you're going to feel better, and you're going to feel better quickly. And then, you know, again, we're not making, you know, any representations that everybody who puts these glasses on immediately will never suffer another migraine attack. That's not what it does. But what we can tell you is we have done a lot of clinical research. And if you take a population, you know, our own personal real world experience matches exactly what large scale independent studies have shown. And it follows the science pretty closely. You know, if you look at, you know, one of the landmark studies that came out in the U.S. in 2018, it was called the Migraine in America Symptom and Treatment Study, the MAS study. And they were looking for what is the most bothersome symptom that a migraine sufferer has. And that study clearly showed by far and away it was light sensitivity. So now you have 90% of your subjects having this. We know it's the most bothersome symptom. We understand how it's triggered. Imagine how beneficial. And then even in 2020, there was another study that came out, which was really exciting too. It also stated that the people, they were looking for what predictors would predict a response to any kind of a treatment in individuals who suffer migraine attacks. And they found that those with light sensitivity are much more likely to get a response to treatment than those who don't have it. So now the circle is complete. We have the 90% of people who have light sensitivity. We have 90% of the same 90% of the people that tend to respond to treatment. And now we have the exact treatment that will address this light sensitivity. Hence, one would imagine you would have improvement. And in our real world experience, that's what we found. We found if the glasses are put on early enough at the beginning of a migraine attack, oftentimes it's prevented. And we saw that in about 38% of our subjects. We saw another 36%, so now 74% in total, found that they could manage their attacks with either using lesser or no medicines. And 90% of the individuals who put them on were able to continue on with their activities of daily living. If you speak to a migraine sufferer, the one thing they will tell you, all I want to do is improve my life when I have my attack. If I'm able to mitigate it by one day, if it's better enough that I can go pick up my kids or take them to soccer practice after school, or it allowed me to finish that one webinar that allowed me to do my work and get my work done, they are thrilled. And that's really the end point. Make people better. You're not going to cure everything, but make them better.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's fantastic. And those numbers are really impressive. 90% of people feel that they could continue on. And 74% felt, you know, they needed less medication or no medication anymore to mitigate their migraines. Really, really incredible. And I thought that was that study that you're talking about there was really interesting as well. The more recent one that said that people who are light sensitive tend to be more responsive to treatment also. That really does close that loop about how important light is in the whole cycle of it.
Yeah, it really does. It was a great study because it, you know, again, those of us who, you know, are in that world, we know the two things that are going to be the worst predictor for you is if you don't have light sensitivity or your headache is already so severe, it's been set in for a long time. It's 9 out of 10 in a scale of 10. You know, those you're not going to be able to probably break very quickly. But if you can make them a little bit better, you're doing a great job. And that's what we're trying to do, is make everybody feel a little bit better. And you know, look, I'm not going to profess that this is inexpensive technology. It's not inexpensive. But I can tell you, when you compare it to what the cost of typical medicines are, or the cost of not being able to work for a day, or not being able to participate in your family or social life, it's the best investment you could ever make.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Were there any other studies? I know you touched on a few. Were there any other studies that you wanted to bring to light, pardon the pun, during the conversation here?
Sure. We are the only lens that is out there that actually is backed by independent clinical studies. So we did do the pilot study, which we referenced in 2016, that was done by the original investigators of the technology. But we subsequently did two other studies that were conducted by an independent CRO, which is a clinical research organization. And, you know, the first study we did was a double-blind randomized crossover trial where we compared our lens against the color match placebo. That was a real wake-up call and a very interesting study for us, because in order to color match the lens, because we did a crossover, and for those who may not be that sophisticated on this, you know, on this podcast, you know, what that means is we don't tell the subject which lens they got, the active or the placebo. But what we do is they get one or the other, and then in the middle of the study, they get the other one, the one that they didn't try yet. So if one was tinted and one was completely clear, so if it was a, you know, a true placebo, they would know, and then you're dealing with the placebo effect. So we actually had to color match them. The only way we could do that was by creating essentially the same active lens that we had, but we decreased the amount of absorption of the bad wavelengths of light. So we thought, well, if we cut it down from, you know, 80 to 40, unfortunately, they both worked, which was really great for us because both of them actually demonstrated a clinical and a statistically significant drop in light sensitivity and headache pain, but there wasn't a difference between the two. But it validated everything for us. We then did another study in 2020 during this COVID-19 epidemic, which was not exactly ideal to do, but we did do it. And we actually this time did not do the crossover. We did a double-blind study whereby the individual subjects either got the Avalux lens or a placebo. And what we were able to demonstrate was that if an individual put these glasses on within 1 hour of the onset of a, and we only looked at severe migraine headaches, but if they put these glasses on within 1 hour of a severe headache, if we looked at all their headaches over a period of 3 weeks, and we eliminated those who took a medicine at the same time as they applied our glasses, because that would skew the results, we were able to show both a clinically and statistically significant difference in light sensitivity. And that was just a really key study for us. We didn't conduct it. It was conducted entirely independently. And we are the only lens that is backed by independent clinical studies like what we described.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that does really validate the product and the quality of it. The question that I'm going to assume a few people out there are wanting to ask, and because I wanted to ask it, so I'm assuming I'm not the only one, is, you know, you see a lot of practitioners using an FL41, for example, for migraines or TBIs and things like that. And of course, as we talked about, the blue blocking trend has blown up over the last few years. How would we compare or say, I think we've already established it, but just to be very clear on it, that Avalux is different and superior to something like that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And actually, this is probably the single most important thing I think we can discuss, is to educate the optical industry as well as the lay consumer how vastly different they are. So if we look at blue blockers, they're essentially clear lenses where light is blocked at the very shortest of the blue range wavelength, which is about 450 nanometers. It is also the only lens that I am aware of where the American Academy of Ophthalmology has actively stated not to get it. They said there is no efficacy in it. There is no proof that over the long term that it does anything in terms of preventing macular diseases, but they also said it does absolutely nothing for eye strain. And the computer vision syndrome or the digital eye strain syndrome, they actually stated that. They stated, don't get this because it does not work. Nonetheless, oftentimes in the consumer world, all this hype is built up and basically that's all a blue light blocker is it blocks, white, not even in the proper, wavelength to do anything for patients who are suffering from real light sensitivity and or migraines. So it's really something that has no comparison to what we have. And FL41 has been really the only predecessor in the industry. And that originally came out in the 1980s, and it was meant to be a tint to help people who had to work under fluorescent light, hence the initials FL41. The trouble with that tint is, first of all, it only blocks wavelengths at 480 nanometers. It does not block, wavelengths at 590 or in the red, and it certainly does not allow any of the green light through. There's no consistency within the industry of the tint. So some could block 50% at 480, some could block 90% at 480, but they are not consistent. There has never been any clinical studies as we've done to actually validate their effect. They are very dark, so they're not easily worn indoor and outdoor, and they do very much distort color. And with that, and because of their darkness, they would often have dark adaptation. So if they go taking the glasses off and go into a light room, you're going to experience that. The Avalux lens, first of all, is patented. It's proprietary. It is a precision optical filter. It blocks 480, it blocks, as we said, the blue light, amber, and red, and it blocks up to 97% of those lights while allowing through about 70% of the green light. It is, as you mentioned, very lightly tinted. You can wear it both indoors and outdoors. There's absolutely no dark adaptation problems with it, and virtually no color distortion. And even if we look at those individuals who actually require to look at color on a computer, like a graphic artist, usually after about 10 minutes, once their palette has been established, they don't even notice they're wearing it. And if you go onto our website, we actually have this beautiful photo, which shows what a view is outside of a very well-placed, sophisticated apartment in downtown Miami. What it looks like through the Avalux lens as opposed to no lens, and you can see it looks almost identical. So it's a very superior lens in terms of its efficacy. It's very different in terms of its features, and it's so much more applicable for today's world because of the fact it's easily worn indoors and outdoors and doesn't cause any distortion.
Yeah, fantastic. It's good, like you said. I think that maybe one of the more important things we talk about is to really make that distinction so everybody kind of knows where this fits and what the difference is. Again, I think because I had that question, I'm sure others will as well. So thank you for clarifying that. I'd like to shift over to a couple of questions unrelated to Avalux. So if you have any other things you'd like to speak on before we do that, I'd be happy to welcome any more comments that you have.
No, I think really, I first of all, as I mentioned, I just appreciate this opportunity. For us, this is just such a landmark treatment for individuals who suffer from light sensitivity. And like I said, the exciting thing for me is, we have a product where it matches the science so well. Mm-hmm. And the clinical studies match our product, and our real world experience matches both the clinical studies and the basic science. It's just such a neat package. And in healthcare, that's so rare for us. We're often stuck, doing a clinical study, seeing a finding, and then we have to go back and go, gee, that's interesting. Now, how in the world is that happening? Why is it happening? Can we explain it? And the fact when you can't, then it really questions the veracity of the accuracy of the finding. Here, everything ties together. So it is super exciting. So that's really the only other thing I really want to mention is that, you know, we're just so excited to get this out into the world of those suffering from light sensitivity, and in particular, the high percentage of migraine sufferers who have them as well.
And if you could, then before we do shift subjects here, if you could let everyone listening know where they could go to learn more about Avalux, to purchase or to inquire further, you know, where would be the best place to reach out?
Sure. It would be at our website, and it's at www.avalux.com. We have a really elegant website put together by my co-founder, David, and everything you need to know about the product is on that website, including the science, including the link to the clinical studies. So I think it would answer most questions. In particular, we do have a table comparing us between a blue light blocker, FL41, and an Avalux lens. And as I mentioned to you before, we are excited that we are going to have the prescription product available within the next 8 weeks. And we will be actively working to get it into the hands of as many Canadian optometrists as we can. Because honestly, from our perspective, the best way for this to be brought to the public is through an eye care professional, because they have the training, they have the skill set, they can screen for the light sensitivity from whatever cause it is, they can screen for, you know, those who suffer from migraine attacks, and then they can also either give a prescription or whatever, plain old pair. But I mean, I think the eye care professional is going to be the central focus for how this is distributed in society. So we're super excited about having that available.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And I know that ECPs will be happy to be part of that process. There's been some tough feelings towards e-commerce and online sales. And I'm even years into it, I'm still having conversations like that with colleagues. But, it's nice that ECPs will be able to kind of be at the core of that. I think everybody will really appreciate it. So as we kind of shift subjects here, or shift kind of towards the latter part of the interview, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions more related to the entrepreneurial journey and or your kind of your professional career kind of from start to finish, and we'll make these sort of short questions. I like to kind of ask four or five quick questions. If you can keep them to roughly a sentence or two, we'll make this sort of rapid fire, if you will. So what advice would you have for somebody starting on their entrepreneurial journey?
Don't be afraid. The most important thing, don't be afraid to try something, because if you don't try it, it's never going to happen. And if you do try it and you have the passion and conviction, there are others that will help. They'll follow you and they'll help make it happen.
That's great advice. What is the biggest lesson you've learned from COVID?
Boy, don't get it. That's for sure. actually in healthcare, that, in medicine, no matter how prepared you think you are, you have to prepare for the unexpected.
Absolutely. Who is the most influential person early in your professional career?
Early in my professional career, that's really a good question. It was the owner of the Florida Panthers, Wayne Huizenga, just an exceptional man, exceptional entrepreneur, man with incredible vision, but such a good person.
Yeah, well, that's not one I would have expected. That's great. What's one thing you do daily that you feel has helped you to become successful over time, or regularly, let's say, if anything? Maybe a daily habit.
Probably the one thing I do is just physical fitness. I just find that, when I am physically feeling well, I can deal with everything so much better. Stress that goes from 100 to 20, or if it really doesn't go to 20, it feels like it's 20. But I think just taking care of yourself as a person will make your business and work life so much better.
Well, that's a great answer. Physical fitness. Is there something that you like to do specifically to train or exercise? Is there a certain type?
No, as long as I get to do something, it's I feel just so much better. I sleep better. I wake up more enthused and more excited. And when I'm pushing myself to work out on the days I really don't want to, those are the days where I really appreciate it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. All right. Last of the short answers. If you didn't become a medical doctor, what else would you have become?
Gee, I'd love to say a rock star. The only problem is, unfortunately, that would require me singing or playing my instruments that well. So I'd love to do that. And actually, I actually do have a serious answer here. I always did want to become an actor. I kid you not. And I actually went to the point where I almost enrolled in an acting school.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. All right. The two last questions that I ask every single guest on the podcast are maybe a little bit more serious, more self-reflective, if anything. So the first of the two is, if we could hop in a time machine and go back to a point in your life where perhaps you were struggling, you can share that moment if you'd like, but more importantly, what advice would you give to yourself at that time?
You know, it was the time probably when I was just indecisive what I wanted to do with my career. You know, medicine was not my lifelong passion. It wasn't something that I always wanted to go through. I was much more interested in athletics than I ever was in healthcare. I think during that time period, I spent time overseas and a lot of reflection. I think I would have just probably given up athletics a little bit earlier and gone more into academics. It would have been a little bit better, but it was definitely that inflection period when you're going between the ages of 18 and 22, where I just really didn't know where I wanted to be. And I knew I wasn't going to be good enough to make a living as an athlete. I may have been good, but not that good. But I wasn't sure what else I wanted to do. And ironically, during that time period, my mother got very ill and passed away. And during that time period, that was probably the greatest motivation for me to go on to, you know, become a physician.
Wow, I can imagine that would have been a very difficult time. So the final question is, everything that you've achieved, all of these amazing achievements and accolades, how much of that would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
You know, I mean, the harder you work, the better your luck becomes, you know, and that's, I mean, I really do believe that. I believe if you just continually work, eventually luck will go your way. I don't care how good you are, how bright you are. If you don't have luck, you're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. So I will always say, you know, the environment plays a significant role, but the harder you work, the more dedicated you are, you know, the better you treat people, the more lucky you're going to be.
Great. Fantastic. Dr. Pasternak, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Any final words you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Sure. Just the last thing, you know, I've been very fortunate in my journey, particularly with Avalux, that I have a number of partners that have just been instrumental in me succeeding. I have business partners. I have legal counsel. I have, you know, the original inventors. I have David, who is my everything. It just, you know, having a great team makes you really great. And I'm just so fortunate that I've had the greatest partners that anybody could have. And whatever success we do have is really just a testimony to how wonderful they are and how well, you know, they have worked out with each other and for myself.
That's wonderful. And I think that goes to show, you know, how important it is to surround yourself with the right people and how they can bring you up. So that's really nice to hear. So once again, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. To everybody else who's listening and watching, I hope you found this valuable. I hope there was a lot of information that you're able to take from this. If you are interested in Avalux, please go check it out online. And again, if you did find some value, don't forget to take a screenshot and throw it up on Instagram. Make sure you leave a review, hit subscribe, hit like, do all those things. I really appreciate it. And I will see you again very soon with another episode.